in January 2020. I had my assessment and he diagnosed me, and it was the best day of my life. Such a weight lifted off my shoulders and like my mom's shoulders, and yeah. So sorry, there I am babbling and giving you a 20-minute long answer.
Welcome to Adulting on the Spectrum. In this podcast, we want to highlight the real voices of autistic adults, not just inspirational stories, but people like us talking about their day-to-day life. Basically, we want to give a voice to a variety of autistic people. I'm Aideen Lam, an autistic author and photographer, and I co-host this podcast with Andrew Camro. Hey, Andrew.
Today, our guest is Olivia. Olivia Hopps is a San Diego native, diagnosed with autism in 2020 at 24 years old. She's also a former sports journalist, business owner, cookbook author. Olivia now makes YouTube videos and hopes to help bring awareness to what autism looks like in females and adults. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, guys. I'm very honored to be here.
So we like to start our podcast off. We ask each guest how they identify, and although we don't mean pronouns such as she, her, you're welcome to share those too. We mean person with autism, on the spectrum, autistic. Do you have a preference? And if so, what is it?
I do not have a preference. I identify with all of them, I guess. I use them interchangeably. So use whatever you guys feel most comfortable with, because it doesn't matter to me.
You know, I'm really amazed because we asked this question because it seems to be like such a controversial topic in the autism community. And I feel like 90% of our guests have said, whatever, I don't care. Like most people don't actually have a preference. And we're on episode like 60, I want to say. I mean, yeah, that's so many episodes.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, that's amazing because I have always thought I was in the minority of not caring. To me, it's the same. But a lot of times on my YouTube videos, people will like get or write kind of rude comments because I will use like something that they disagree with or whatever, and they'll like give me a lecture on it, and I'm just like, I personally don't care, so I'm going to call myself, you know, whatever is just coming out of my mouth. But so that's good. That's good to know, actually, that I'm not just some weird outlier that a lot of people that come on here also don't care.
I think, you know, there is a vocal minority out there. They're very vocal, so you feel like they're the majority,
so
right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. That's so true. You're so right about that. So yeah. So I do usually, I'll get like people who then back me up like on that comment. So I'm like, okay, good. But yeah, it's always the really loud ones that, you know, get the most attention, and you forget about all the people that are saying nice things or agree with you, you know?
Yep, exactly. It's like those people who write Yelp reviews only when they have a bad experience after going to a restaurant.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. Because that's the ones you read. You don't look at all the 5-star reviews. You go and look at the 1-star reviews. Yeah. So yeah, I get it.
So why don't you take us back in time and when you were diagnosed with autism? So you were an adult. Can you tell us what made you seek a diagnosis, or did someone notice? What was that journey like?
Yes. So ever since I can remember, I've wanted to know why my brain seemed to not work right. I always said there was something like wrong. My brain didn't work correctly. And this was like from as long as I can remember, since I was a kid. And my mom likes to tell the story of how I would used to, I'd have meltdowns. Obviously we didn't know they were meltdowns at the time. We thought they were some kind of temper tantrum. And after trying many things to, you know, fix the situation, which is not fixable, she then learned to just put me in my room and let me work through the meltdown. And unbeknownst to me, she would stand outside my door, and I would be, I'm a Christian, and I would be screaming at God, why did you make me like this, from as young as like 8 years old. And so my whole life, I had this burning question, because I knew like something wasn't quite right. Like I wasn't like the people around me. And I really wanted to know what that was, the reasoning behind that. And so I got like many diagnoses growing up of, you know, like depressions, anxiety, PTSD, all the usual kind of things. And I probably was like the only person ever that like would get excited when I got new diagnosis, because I thought, oh, maybe this is my answer that I've been searching for. And, you know, they never quite fit. They fit some of what I went through, but not everything. And so I'd kind of given up hope of finding my answer, just kind of thought maybe there wasn't an answer, until I was 22 and I was up visiting my best friend from elementary school in Washington State. She was graduating college, and so I went to her graduation, and at her graduation dinner afterwards with her family, I was babbling along because I can't tell a short story and I have no boundaries. So I was babbling along about like all my life problems and all these things that I've gone through, you know, in my life. And her aunt was sitting across from me, who I didn't know. I guess I had met her as like a kid, but I didn't remember her. And I could tell she was very intensely listening to me. And it kind of made me nervous because I noticed. So I thought like, oh my gosh, did I say something that like offended her or something? And so after I was done babbling, she said, can I ask you a question? And I don't want you to get offended. And I was like, oh yeah, sure. I don't get like offended at anything. And she said, have you ever been tested for autism? And I was like, no. And at that point, I really didn't even know what autism was. The only example of autism that I had in my life was, at the time I owned my own business and I had an autistic young man working for me and helping me. And I knew I was pretty much nothing like him. He had more severe help needs, support needs. But obviously her then saying this, my friend's aunt, really intrigued me. And she said, maybe, you know, you want to look up some autism traits in females, because my daughter, she was like 5 years younger than me, so I think she was 17 at the time, was just diagnosed, and you sound a lot like her. And so, of course, as soon as I got back to my hotel room that night, I was Googling, you know, traits of autism in girls, and it was just like the light bulb moment, and suddenly my whole life was making sense. And I got so excited, and I got home and I was seeing a weekly therapist. And I brought it up to her, and she immediately said like, oh, there's absolutely no way. There's no way, because you and I can have a conversation. So there's no way you could be autistic. And I got really embarrassed, and I was like, I have to find a new therapist, because that was mortifying. And so I kind of like dropped the topic, and it took another year and a half, almost 2 years, for me to get finally diagnosed because of that therapist's reaction to me. Cause I got so just embarrassed by her answer. But finally, after talking with, you know, my parents about it, and especially my mom, you know, she's like, I think 100% you're autistic. And so I was able to find a doctor who specialized in diagnosing adults. And he, weirdly enough, his private practice office was in the same building of my therapist office, that said there's no way. And so in January 2020, I had my assessment, and he diagnosed me, and it was the best day of my life.
It's funny because every time we have a female woman in a podcast sharing their diagnosis story as an adult, I always feel like they're so similar. I mean, my story is very similar to yours. I like how you mentioned your mom, because when I was diagnosed, my mom felt relief too. She was, because a lot of the time when she was raising me, she's like, what am I doing wrong? You know, why can't she do this and that? And she felt like it was her parenting. And I think it took some of the guilt off of her shoulders too. When I was diagnosed, you know, she was doing the best she could in a country. I was raised in France where there was like no resources. Yeah. She didn't even know I had autism anyway. So what else could she have done? You know, so I really relate to that.
I think that's interesting. And I think this is probably just more my mom than, you know, male versus female, but my mom felt the opposite of relief. You know, she felt guilt, right? For, oh my God, all of these signs were so obvious. How didn't I notice? Right? Like, and I had a lot of very stereotypical signs, et cetera. So I think she was like, oh, that's why he loved just staring at fans. Oh, or like, but like in like a good way, I think, or like a caring way. Like she's like, if she had known, she felt like she could have done more. Like she felt guilty. So
we can be both, you know.
Yeah,
no, that's
like
that's
no,
interesting. Yeah, well, because Eileen, what you said is like almost like verbatim what my mom said to the doctor who diagnosed me. She's like, and she, you know, started like crying, and then there I am, like not knowing what to do because I'm not good with that kind of stuff. And you know, she's like, I felt like it was my fault and that I had done something wrong, that I parented wrong, you know, that I had, you know, done something incorrectly. And so just that relief and the guilt feeling being taken off her shoulders, that it was nothing that she did. But then too, in turn, the whole like, well, I wish, like, why didn't I notice it sooner so that I could have gotten her help? And I think that was actually more my feelings. Like I went through like a little period of time of like not really anger at my parents, because my mom always would say even before I got diagnosed, is like, oh, we always knew Olivia was like special, like Olivia was different, like we knew she was different, you know, people were always trying to, you know, or we knew with her she was a square peg trying to get fit into a round hole. And so I would always like kind of get upset, because I'm like, if you know, were so sure that I was different and stuff, why didn't you fight more to figure out what it was so they didn't have to go through all this, these traumas. And you know, it's like, then I feel guilty for thinking that, because obviously I know that she was trying her hardest and there just wasn't the resources available and nobody noticed. So how was she supposed to know? Because it's not like she was educated. If doctors didn't know, then she wasn't going to know. But so, yeah, so I can see both your points with my mom for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, it's not their fault, because back then there was just not as much awareness. I feel like right. Nowadays it would be harder. Like, I don't think I would be missed as a child nowadays, but you yeah. know, 30 years ago it was much different. And you know, right. when my son was diagnosed, Charlie, my oldest, I told mm-hmm. my mom, and I told my followers at the time, I didn't have any like followers. I mean, they're not called followers on your private page, friends. I told my friends,
okay.
and she was like, uh-huh. you shouldn't tell people, oh my God, they're going to think he's the R word. You know, she was like, so like against me, like sharing anything about Charlie's diagnosis, because she was so afraid of the stigma around it, you know? Mm-hmm. And after a year of me sharing, like she changed her mind and she was like very supportive. She started posting about it on her own page to educate people in France.
Great.
But there was like so much stigma at first around that, you know, the autism. And it was just like really shocking and made me wonder like, well, if she would never have believed the doctor telling her I was autistic, because she felt, you know, she would have felt
right.
shame because of other people. Anyway,
right.
it's lots of feelings around a diagnosis.
Yeah, like my mom's always been very supportive, like since I started sharing. And it's like, if like you weren't sharing, if I wasn't sharing, if all these people weren't sharing, then there still would be those like big stigmas, because nobody would know, because everybody would just keep private. And you know, I still have people that come on my YouTube videos and say like, you shouldn't put yourself in a box and like you shouldn't have a label and blah blah blah. But it's like, no, I literally searched my whole life for that label. I wanted to know. It's my answer, you know. And it's just like, since I got diagnosed, my life has become abundantly easier, because I've just been able to now learn about how my brain works, how I work, and keep myself out of situations and scenarios that, you know, are triggering to me. And obviously it's not perfect. You go through things that you can't predict, but life's been so much easier to navigate, because it's like, finally, like I have like a map or like directions.
Can you tell us the most challenging thing about your autism? And also, what's your favorite thing?
Most challenging thing, I think, would be I struggle with burnout a lot. And so I've never been able to just keep like a normal job, or even just a job in general, because I burn out on things so quickly. And then I get really, really anxious and really depressed. And so it's like a bad like cycle that I've been in kind of my whole life. You know, I jump into whatever new special interests I have 1,000,000%, and I get burned out on it really quickly. So that's been a struggle. Just work has been such a struggle because of that, because, you know, obviously I realized when I was 19 that I was like, I can't have a boss. I have to be my own boss. But then even so, with the businesses that I've created, I get tired of them and want to move on. And like, I can't even get myself out of bed to do work for my own business. So that's definitely been the hardest thing I think about my autism. And then My favorite thing is probably, and it's really funny because I just yesterday I made a YouTube video or published a YouTube video about hyper focus, and about how everybody always says it's such like an autism superpower. And the video is actually kind of like saying the opposite, though. Hyper focus is still my favorite, my autistic trait that I have, because I've been able to teach myself so much stuff, on my own, and just become like all these cool become well versed in all these cool subjects. But I always say that nobody ever talks about the downside of hyper focus, and maybe not everybody experiences this, and I wonder if you guys have, is that me, when I get hyper focused on something, I then like don't take care of myself. I forget to eat, go to the bathroom, like I can't shower, I can't sleep because I'm so hyper focused on something. So even though being able to hyper focus has allowed me to do some incredibly cool and like impressive things in my life, it's also made me very sick, like physically and stuff in life as well.
Andrew, you experienced that, right? I feel like you've talked
Yeah,
about that.
no, I mean, from all aspects, from, except, well, a little bit the opposite with the burnout. I just go too far when I'm burned out. I don't stop. I just push myself further, thinking that will fix it, and that doesn't fix it. And with the hyper focus, especially, I can agree, because if you just to the point where you're neglecting everything else, right? And you're only focused on that, one thing. I don't go through a lot of new hyper focuses. I usually have like the same, or well, special interest. I usually go through it, but no, there's days where my wife's like, it's 6 o'clock. Where were you today? And I was home, right? But like, and I just couldn't get off that train of, being focused on whatever I was on. So I agree, and I can relate.
It's interesting that you don't go through like new ones, because I do go through new ones, and it doesn't have to necessarily be related to like a special interest. It's just like whatever I'm working on. So the most recent one is my parents were out of town for 2 weeks, and I was left home alone for the first time like ever, like truly like by myself in in this house, because I'm living with them right now. Which was like amazing because I love being alone. But we've been like in the middle of remodeling our kitchen, like doing it like DIY, because my dad like refuses to like pay somebody. He's like, oh, I can do it. And so I was like, I'm gonna finish the kitchen because I'm tired of having a half-done kitchen. And so I literally finished the whole kitchen while they were gone in this 2 week time period. But and so it's like that's awesome. But I like again, I was neglecting things that I needed to do or should have been doing. Obviously, I neglected taking care of myself. So it's like super cool that I got the kitchen done, but it definitely came at a price, which I got to find a balance so that that doesn't happen.
I don't know if it's due to the same thing, but I have that thing where when I have an idea in my head and my therapist thinks it's due to the OCD, is that I will like dream about it. I will wake up in the night thinking about it until it's done. So like if I want like a wall painted in the house, I'm gonna like think about it day and night, and it's gonna like prevent me from doing anything until that thing is done and out of the way, and that can be something like a wall painted, or like if I remember that like there is a shoe that's not like in the right spot downstairs that I didn't get a chance to, put in the right spot. But so it's great in a way because it forces me to do things. Like I don't procrastinate. I get things done. But yeah, the downside is that it gets like so obsessive, and it prevents me from doing other things. And it also annoys the heck out of people around me because I can't stop talking about it until it's done. And sometimes it doesn't get done, and I still talk about it, right?
That is so me. So it's interesting that your doctor or your therapist thinks it's OCD, because I've never been diagnosed with OCD, but I definitely feel like I have OCD tendencies in certain things. But that you described perfectly. It's like I couldn't go to sleep because I was like, there's things in the kitchen that aren't done. So like, why am I sleeping when I could be up doing them? No, that's what I always say. I always say like, it's not that I don't have, anxiety and depression and PTSD and stuff, but it's under the umbrella of autism.
I mean, sec where is the line? Where does autism start and end? Where does another condition come in? It's like sometimes I like read things about like ADHD, and I'm like, well, am I misdiagnosed? Is it ADHD? Because there's some overlap too. But I asked my therapist, and she was like, no, it's autism.
Yeah,
So
well,
that's super
Eileen,
cool.
did I send you the picture when I was getting my eye tracking study? They put all the gel on me. I did that again. I'm still autistic, by the way. I do clinical trials at Yale when they need people. And that's a good way to get a diagnosis if there is a clinical trial by you. I always say that because they have to test you. And they have to retest me like every like couple of years because they need to for the clinical trial. So like, yep, still am.
Wait, how do they re-diagnose you?
So this was shorter. They didn't have to do as much. It was only like a couple hours because they had they didn't need to do any like intelligence testing. Like apparently that was still good enough. So it was a lot shorter than the first time because they had already done that. They have to like redo certain tests for the trials.
Your intelligence testing, you didn't get that?
No, well, I got that before. I didn't have to do it again. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah.
Good to know. Yeah, I don't think we have that around Austin, but maybe.
I mean, and I recommend it to people because like, the first time you go, they do like a really good assessment. And, you know, I mean, for me, I'm in Connecticut, so it's Yale. So it's like Yale does an assessment and got the report. So, I mean, that was definitely very helpful and validating. And it's not only free, you get paid if you get in the trial.
So, Olivia, can you tell us a bit more about your bakery and everything like related to cooking? You had a bakery and then you sold, like, what's the story there?
Yeah. So I have to back up a little more. So growing up, my special interest was football and journalism. I wanted to be a sports journalist. And so, and this comes back to my hyper-focus. Because I was able to hyper-focus and teach myself stuff and be like, so diligent and like internships that I was getting, I was able to get what I thought was my dream job at the NFL Network at 18 years old without ever having to go to college. And it turned out that I hated it because I didn't like working a 9-to-5. And so I ended up quitting after like my first season because they hire you like per season, it's not full time. And I would have normally moved. So I had to move to LA from San Diego and I normally just would have moved home, but I had done the like typical, I met a boy scenario who, he's now my fiance and we're getting married in September. But so I didn't want to move home. So, I needed to start making money somehow, cause my savings were dwindling very quickly. And I'd always loved baking and stuff. And I thought, oh, well, I'll like try to do like an at home, like little bakery, make cookies, cakes, stuff like that. And it just didn't work. There's too many other people doing it. And then somebody brought to my attention edible cookie dough. And I've always been a huge cookie dough fan. I would always eat it out the bowl, you know, while baking cookies. And so I thought, well, that would be a super cool idea if I could like start something where it was all customizable, kind of like Cold Stone, if you guys know what that is, but with cookie dough. So you go in and you pick your base cookie dough flavor instead of ice cream, and then your toppings get mixed in. And so of course my mom's like, well, you can't open a bakery in Los Angeles. She's like, so try to do it from home first to see if it works. And so I was able to licensed like my home kitchen at first when I started off small, and this was in 2015. And then I just was like able to continue to grow the business. And then I had to like get a real commercial kitchen, and I was all online, and I got a cookbook deal out of it, which was really amazing. And it was a great job for me because it allowed me to, you know, work at my own pace and take breaks because it was kind of seasonal. I couldn't make the dough in the summer and ship it because it would be too hot and it would melt. So I would always get the summer months off. So it was like a great like way for my brain to like reset and get ready for like the next like season of dough making. And but again, as I was saying, I was just getting very tired out of it and burnt out on it. And I wanted to do something new and different. So I decided to see if I could sell it. And so last May, so May 2022, I put it for sale. And this really nice family bought it from me, who also, their child is autistic. So it stayed in an autism family, which was really cool. And I sold it, and now I'm retired at the moment, just making YouTube videos and doing cool stuff like this.
So you had a lot of careers already in your in your short life, I was gonna say.
Yes, I have. I've had so many careers in my short life. Yeah, I can't keep one. I get bored and I'm like, oh, I need to do something else. So, but the, I have to say I was very impressed, like, and kind of proud of myself because I stuck that one out for 7 years, which is vastly longer than I've ever stuck out another thing, another career.
And what made you want to sell it? Was it all the reasons that you gave previously? Was there more to it? And second, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I like, it was becoming harder and harder for me to get up and do my work without feeling like so much dread and so much anxiety. And I was bored. And like, I guess this is probably gonna sound bad. Not that I thought it was a sinking ship, but it was like, cookie dough was such a fad, you know, just like, you know, at one point, like at least when I was growing up, you know, like, frozen yogurt shops were a fad and there was like a frozen yogurt shop on like every corner. And then it was like cupcakeries, you know? And so I felt like cookie dough had kind of like run its course and I had kind of, I had done everything I could for the business and there, I didn't know how to take it to like the next level to where like I could grow it like even bigger, like where I needed, you know, like a whole team of people or something. And so I kind of just thought like it had run its course in my life and there was nothing else that I could do like for the business. And so I was like, I think somebody else who is more passionate about it can, I'm sure, take it and grow it more, but I've kind of grown it to all can be. It, you know, it had like, it steadily grown, like, or even quickly grown the whole, like the first like 5-6 years. And then it had like just steadied and plateaued. And so I just, yeah. So anyway, so for those reasons, I was like, I think it's run its course in my life and, hopefully somebody else can, you know, take it. Cause I didn't want to see it die or else I just would have closed it. But I thought, you know, I'll try to sell it first. And if nobody wants it, then I'll close. But, it was a fun company and, you know, I had a lot of regular customers that, you know, I didn't want to let down. So, you know, it was great that somebody wanted to continue on, you know, this like idea that I had. So it was very special.
When you started, you know, looking for somebody to purchase it, did they purchase it because they knew that you were autistic too and, you know, they were, or was that just like a weird coincidence or was that part of something you were looking for?
It was kind of a weird coincidence, but also kind of not. So what happened is I like put it for sale, like, well, I mean, like I tried like word of mouth too. And like, I posted on my Instagram, but then there's like, websites online that you can like sell businesses on. And it's kind of like, you know, it's like eBay for like businesses. Cause people can like bid on your business. And so I put it on there and it was getting like views and I was getting questions about it, but nobody had like made you know, an offer or anything. And then, or a couple of people had, but they were pretty, like, they're a lot lower than what I was asking. So I said, you know, not yet, but you know, we'll see. And then, somebody reached out to me because I had started to a online edible cookie dough business course for like aimed at autistic adults to be able to start. And it didn't need to be specifically a cookie dough business online, but just how to start their own business online. And so I made this like whole, you know, online course that people could purchase, anybody, but again, it was specifically geared towards autistic adults to try to help them be able to become self-sufficient and not also have to rely on like getting a like a real 9-to-5 job. Cause so many of us struggle with that. And so this, woman, she had bought the course for her son who was autistic. And then she asked, she's like, oh, is your cookie dough company gonna reopen? Because it was closed for like the summer months. And, I said, I don't know. I'm trying to sell it. If I can't sell it, then probably not. And she's like, well, I'd be interested in buying it. And so that's, and then we got to talking and then she ultimately made me an offer and bought it. So, yeah. So I guess like kind of coincidence, but like also not. So it's a mix.
Oh, that's awesome. That sounds pretty perfect.
Yeah. Lucky.
Oh yeah, it was.
In sports, you know, NFL, football, American soccer for Eileen, you know, seems to be just so male dominated. Did you experience any adversity when you were pursuing your sports career or anything of that nature that you want to comment on?
You know, at one point I thought, you know, I was put on this earth to like break the gender ceiling in the world of football. And I think I did in many ways. I played football on my high school football team, which is a hilarious many stories. And I was like the first girl to score points for my high school. And so, you know, that was a blast. And then, you know, during doing journalism, I have to say, because, you know, people, you know, are always would always kind of like insinuate, like, oh, have you had problems because you're a girl? But I really didn't. People were pretty good about it. The thing that I had that I was discriminated against was age, because I was so young. And so that was really like my biggest barrier, was the age thing rather than the gender thing. Because, you know, people, you know, when I went to the NFL, I like was afraid to tell people my age, to the point where I didn't talk about it, because I knew if people knew how young I was, then their follow-up question would be like, well, then how did you go to college and get this job? And I didn't want people knowing that I didn't go to college, because I didn't want them thinking like that, like I didn't know what I was doing, or I couldn't keep up with them, and I shouldn't have gotten the job. So, and you know, that's something that I'm a big advocate for, is like, you can go about getting your education in a different way other than just traditional schooling. Obviously, if you want to do the traditional college route, amazing. But for me, that was just never an option, because I hated school so much and it brought me so much anxiety. You know, and I like to prove, or I like to think that I proved a lot of people wrong, who, when I said, and I think I was 16, and I made the decision that there was no way I was going to make it through college. Like I didn't think I was going to make it through high school. And you know, everybody, friends, family, even people like my friends my own age, were like, if you don't go to college, you're gonna like end up having a miserable life and being a hobo or something. And I was like, and I'm very competitive, so just I think pushed me to work even harder to prove that there are other options, there are other ways. But again, in doing so, because I was so young, it I got I was met with some adversity there. But for the gender thing, surprisingly, not as much as people would think, and even I myself would have thought. People were always very, very nice. And I think it helped also in the fact that I was young, because people were like, oh, like she's so cute, and like I want to help her, you know. So it kind of, I guess, went both ways with the age. People either like thought it was great, or they thought it was terrible. So there was no really middle ground. But yeah, so I have to say, like, thankfully, everybody I worked with in the football NFL world, at least to my face, didn't care about my gender.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was.
So, how about your personal life? You mentioned earlier that you were getting married in
Yes.
September.
Yes, September.
Are you guys gonna live together? Are you nervous about that? Like, what's going on?
So no, I'm not nervous about that, because we do live together already. And I know he's the one, because he's the only person besides like my immediate family that I've never like gotten annoyed with, that I can spend all day long every day with him and not like get tired of him. Because other people, like especially as a kid, like sleepovers were torturous for me, because I would like wake up and like literally like sneak into my parents' room, because I couldn't stand to be around my friend for like another second. But with Alex, my fiance's name, that's never happened. So that's obviously how I knew he was the one. But yeah, I've dated him since I met him at the NFL Network. So I've been dating him for almost 9 years. And you know, things are good, but it definitely, you know, was adjustment for me when we first started dating. He's my first boyfriend I've ever had. And I kind of never thought I would like get married, because for the reason I kind of just said, is that like I could never stand people for very long, and I really need my alone time to like function. I very much don't like being touched, so I always just thought that I probably was never going to get married. So it was a shock to find somebody that like, and like I was okay with him. But so, you know, it's you know, we're in the like mundane kind of thing, because we're both living with my parents right now. We moved in during COVID to like save money. We haven't moved back out yet. But you know, it's hard in the sense of, when I met Alex, he was a very physical, touchy-feely person, and I wasn't. So I feel bad because he's had to compromise more than I have on that aspect. I've become very, very much more of a being okay with being touched. Like I didn't even like being hugged. And now like I'm okay with hugs and stuff, and I can, you know, kind of cuddle with him at times. But you know, he's had to make quite the adjustment because I'm not comfortable with that. So, you know, just it's, that's been probably like the hardest part of the relationship is the physical stuff. Not that he's ever like been, like he's been so understanding about it and so good about understanding how my brain works. And, you know, he's the only person that can calm me down. And, he really truly like gets me. And he, you know, really takes care of me when I can't take care of myself. And so, you know, I feel really blessed to have him because, I'm difficult to deal with and put up with, and he does it, and he does it with a smile on his face. I'm very excited to finally marry him and do something I never thought I would do. We're getting married in Italy, which is really, exciting. So I partially grew up in Italy. My dad owned his own business and it was partially located there. So it's a very special place for me, and it's, you know, it's my second home. And so, I'm excited to, you know, get to, I mean, he's been twice now, but just to get to show him where I grew up partially and all of our family, they're not really our family, but we think they're our family over there. Share all those like memories with him growing up, because Italy has always been like my happy place. It's when I was over there, I felt, and obviously growing up, I didn't know I was autistic, but I always felt so much calmer there and less anxious. And it's like my autism like traits, like obviously they didn't go away, but like they like diminished a little bit. They like weren't as prevalent when I was over there. And I just remember always being happier and less stressed over there. So, you know, still to this day, it's my happy place. So, I'm really excited to get married there and just like make another really cool memory over there.
Pretty exciting. Italy is such a great place, but the marriage part too, but the
but Italy, yes, that's the more fun.
Yeah. Europe is nice to visit, to live, not so much a story for another day, but to visit, it's just so nice, especially the food. Sounds like you're really into food, so I'm sure you'll have a blast.
Food, yeah, that's the best part is food, yeah.
So do you want to tell people where they can find you on social media?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram at Olivia Hops, just my name, though I don't like post like autism content really on there occasionally. I don't do a lot of posting on there, just more for personal life stuff. If you want to follow along on my personal journey, you can follow me there. If not, feel free to subscribe to my YouTube channel, which is if you just go to YouTube and type again my name Olivia Hops, or youtube.com/@Olivia Hops, my channel will pop up, and that's where I do all my autism content and stuff on there. So I would super appreciate a subscribe there.
Awesome. And to wrap it up, we always ask our guests some quick fire questions, so you just tell me the first thing that comes to your mind.
Okay, cool.
Who's your favorite cook?
Ooh, cook. Gordon Ramsay, probably. I like how he's so blunt.
I like it. Favorite autism representation in like a movie, book, TV show?
Ooh, my favorite book, because it really helped me when I was first diagnosed, is Asperger Girls. I love that book. I got it. It was an easy read because I hate reading. And what I did actually is I went and as I was reading it, I highlighted things that really spoke to me. And then the book got passed around my family so they could understand me better. So it was really cool.
I was just going to ask, what's your favorite book?
Yeah.
Oops. I'm psychic.
Green one.
I got you first.
Do you have a favorite autism advocate?
Probably Carrie, just because Carrie Magro, because he's been so nice and like kind of taken me under his wing and has been so helpful. And because, you know, I don't even know how he found me, but, you know, he's just been so nice and so lovely and always asked me to be part of, you know, these panels, like how we met. And he's just been very supportive. And so I just love his message, and he's so sweet and so kind. And he's definitely my favorite.
Well, make sure he sees the little shout out.
Yes, nice plug.
And finally, what's your favorite color?
Blue. Blue, light blue specifically. Blue, I have a dog named Blue. My whole room is blue. You can't quite see, but like this wall over here is blue. My first word was blue. So yes, I'm a blue girl.
Wow, blue is an interesting, that's a hard word. Blue. Like the
To
L
say?
sound as a baby, like blah,
Yeah,
blah.
that was my first word. Yeah, I swear that was my. I didn't talk till I was like almost three, but when I did, that was my first word.
Well, thank you so much for coming on our podcast today. I love learning about your story and all the similarities between us girls on the spectrum, and with you too, Andrew. Don't worry.
Yeah, it's okay. No offense taken.
Well, thank you both so much for having me. I've had a blast, and thanks for having me on and letting me babble about my story.